So at this moment, I'm going to turn it over to Ryan. Cool. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm always so nervous about falling upstairs. I feel like this is kind of like the graduation moment all over again as an adult. But thanks, Brian. My name is Ryan McGinnis, and I'm over at Notarize. Has anybody gotten a document notarized before? Raise your hand. Wow, that is way more people than I would have anticipated. Did you know you could do it online? Has anybody done it online before? Have you used Notarize? No. Did you use Notarize? You did. That's awesome. Cool. I mean, it's not relevant to the presentation at all, just my own interest. But today, I had a quick question before we start. Has anybody in their life, probably more when you're younger, ever lied to get attention? Raise your hand. Come on. I feel like most of us did when we were kids, right? And why did we do it? Probably we had siblings. We wanted, just more attention in everything, our friend group, whatnot. So Miller Lite actually did a commercial on this, the advertising group that was responsible for an ad for them in the 90s. So we want to understand who buys Miller Lite. And so what they realized in the bar was the people who encouraged more rounds to be bought were the people who told the best stories. So when you go out with your friends, restaurants, bars, whatnot, whoever is like really leading the conversation, whether it's a good time or a bad time, that dictates whether that will continue to go further on. So I wanted to make a claim here today. I think that the best storytellers grew up pathological liars. Now, I'm doing this mainly because I feel like my mom would appreciate this. Like, I competed a lot for attention, and I'm the oldest, and so that said something. But I do think there are some really interesting parallels we can make to the ways that, I'm not going to go super deep, because then we could get really weird on another level. But I am going to defend pathological liars in the early stages of your life for three reasons. I think pathological liars are very resourceful. If you really press them on how a story unfolded or like actually fact-checking them, they're pretty down to the nuts and bolts of what actually happened, even though if it didn't. They're detail-oriented, so it's hard to fake three home runs if you can't tell them like how big the field was or why you were able to hit three home runs at recess when recess was only 35 minutes long and then this teacher was out sick, so that's why gym took place during that time. Like, there's all these components that's the story I use, in case you're curious. And they're consistent. If you're a good storyteller, true or not, you do it often, because if you don't tell great stories and all of a sudden one day you do, everybody's going to be a bit skeptical. Like, did that really happen? So that also happened to me, so I had to get good at it. So today I'm going to share three stories that I hope will be helpful for you guys. I know I'm standing between you in a keynote, and then networking and cocktails, and then flights home. Unfortunately, most of them are red eyes, so I apologize. So hopefully this doesn't put you to sleep, so you get ready for that, but more like energized for tomorrow. So we're going to talk about writing about people, writing about developers and technology, and then what I do now, which is about writing all about all of the stuff that no one thinks is fun, but someone has to do it. So we're going to start with a story. How many people here are from Massachusetts? Raise their hand. All right. My cold people in the house. How many have heard of Lowell? So that's where I'm from. Represent. Nobody here is from Lowell, I bet. Anybody from Lowell? Yeah, that's what I thought. So Lowell is great. It does have some negative reputations associated with it, but there was a newspaper growing up that I was in for sports that I really looked up to, and there was an opportunity in college to be an intern, a sports writer for this newspaper that I grew up loving. I applied. I was so excited. I said, Mom, this is it. Like, nothing's more, prideful for a mother than like a kid who never leaves the city that they grew up in. And so I got an email. I was trying to find it, but it was probably in my student email that said, we do not accept applicants who didn't go to journalism schools at BC, BU, or Northeastern. Point blank. They were like, you're not the pedigree of who we're looking for our middle tier to lower tier publication that only people in the greater Boston area read. So I said, fine, that's okay. 6 months later, I got a sports writing internship at the Boston Globe. So good riddance, like, don't let the door hit you on the way out. And this was the best experience of my life, hands down, because not only did I get ridiculed on what I wore to work every day by great sports writers like Dan Shaughnessy and Bob Ryan, but it really taught me a lot about storytelling and writing. So I initially wanted to be a teacher when I went to college. Respect to teachers. That was not something that I could pull off. But what I did enjoy was storytelling, not because I told fake stories when I was younger, but because I enjoyed when you like tell a really good story and the group is really excited to hear more. So what I learned at the Boston Globe was that it's all about people. And so today in marketing, we write a lot about our companies and the problems we solve for personas that no one understands about at Thanksgiving. Like a systems operator over Thanksgiving is not something that like Aunt Judy's like, yes, at my yoga class, there's a systems operator and he is a great client. It was about how do we make people feel something? There's a story that will always stay with me. I was covering a boys' basketball game in the city of Lynn. So one way out, one way in, that's the joke. If you guys don't know about Lynn, it's fine. And it was between Lynn Classical and Lynn English. Now, these two schools hated each other, and this was like the biggest game of the year. I took my little brother with me when I covered it, and there were no seats. I had to stand underneath the hoop the entire time. There were so many people making noise that you could hear the warm-up music a block away outside. I passed my story to my editor, and he goes, this is awful. So what are you talking about? He said, I heard this game was incredible. I heard it was electric. I heard that essentially people broke the stands. I don't get any of that in your story. He's like, I want to hear the sneakers. I want to hear the music. I want to feel the family tension when one family has to decide where they will sit because sons go to either school or whatnot. And that's not in this. So that was what I learned most, which was like using the senses, making people feel like they were there. So when we talk about doing case studies and sharing those stories, using the same kind of approach, which is, you know, for us, I'm going to do a little bit of spoiler alerts, but like we help people close in their home from the Grand Canyon on an iPad. 100th year anniversary, by the way, that was a national landmark earlier this week. We tried to jump on that tweet storm. I got a thumbs up. I like that. And so humanizing that. And it wasn't until I wrote about my childhood best friend who had passed away, unfortunately, in college, and the alma mater, our high school, was dedicating their baseball season to him that I really understood the magnitude of this, which was for people that are connected, where there's a unifying, or people are coming together for an event or something that really unites them, you need to make sure all of the emotions are represented. And while there, this was kind of the culmination of all of this. You're sharing an incredible story. You're making people feel something. You're carrying on a legacy via your writing. Like his mother called me. It was a very emotional event for me. But this was something that I carried through from my time at the Globe throughout all the positions that I had, which these three things I think are super important for us today that are the biggest things that I think about every single day, which is, who is the hero and who is the villain? Obviously, like in a sports scenario, that is there's nothing more true than that. There's a team on a winning streak. There is a rivalry. There is somebody who just like hasn't lost yet, or whatever they haven't overcome needs to be served to them on a silver platter. It needs to happen. So that's the first thing. So in our companies, like who are we competing against? What is that story arc? And then make people feel that they should either root for you or root against the other person. The second thing is using all of the senses. I'm talking about smells too. If it smelled like the basketball jerseys hadn't been washed in 2 weeks because they had, you know, won a bunch of games and that was the thing that they believed in, like you can't smell through paper yet, but like you should still try. And then the last one is, and this is like journalism 101, and when you're breaking news, it's a balance of being first and right. If you're right but not first, it doesn't matter. If you're first but not right, you lose credibility. And so when you're in situations where you're breaking news or having history happen for your company for the first time, find that balance. Like you want to share that for the first time and break that news, but you also want to have your sources and you also want to fact check things and you don't want to come out and say something that even the people that you sell to know isn't true. So then afterwards, I went to Twitter. And now this is a bunch of luck that happened. I emailed 15 recruiters. My resume went to the same person and they were like, fine, we'll give this guy a shot on a phone interview. And it ended up working out. It was great. But we marketed to developers, app developers specifically. The office that I was in Boston was via an acquisition of a company called Crashlytics that let mobile app developers know when their apps were crashing and why. So it was very actionable. So we had built this platform for mobile app developers around all of the tools they would need to build effective mobile apps. And what I learned was developers are exactly like marketers. They just don't like care as much about like the context, the feelings. Like they want you to get to the point faster. Like give me what I need to know, solve my problem, make me trust you, all of those things. So There we go. So this is some of the content that we produced, and it's centered around trust. A lot of it is around credibility and trust. When you're marketing to people that are highly skeptical, it's important to showcase kind of like the progress you're making on an innovation stage, and then also letting them know that like you are the best, the market leader, the people that are going to help take their business, no matter how small or big it is, to the next level. So when we were awarded by Apple as being the best crash reporting and mobile analytics solution, it was important for us because Apple had their own stuff. And so that was cool for us to be able to market, because we were able to say, look, like real recognize real. Like, you know that you have things that we do, but we did it better, and now we're going to share it with the community, and that was great. And then also scale. Like, we all run into customers or prospects who don't believe that we can support them. Tell me that you've worked with a company like me. I don't believe you've ever worked with Bank of America before or a company like it. And you're like, here you go. And they're like, we still don't believe you. Or like, there's some other aspect that they're skeptical about. But these were two of the big focuses that we had from a storytelling perspective, which was not only the how-tos and the content, like tell me how to do something, but then also there's that sense of security and trust, not only that the platform can provide, but you as a relationship builder can give them. So the lessons that I learned here, and this remains true today at Notarize, because we're dealing with people in the legislative space and the public sector, which is how to build a content strategy that wins the hearts and minds of skeptics. Everything that we did, long form, short form, from a storytelling perspective, was all like in the back of our minds. We knew that the skeptics were the ones who were going to judge us the hardest, and everything we did had to be grounded in, are we proving something right, or are we making a new claim that will actually reinstate some trust. Show your work. And I think we all know the show don't tell, but this is specifically true when marketing to developers, wherever there was an opportunity to show a line of code, whenever there was an opportunity to show a video, have a podcast, anything you could embed to kind of bring one more level of credibility to your story that was super important. And then the last one is kind of like the one of us, going back to the Miller Lite, not trying to make this about alcohol today, because I know we're talking about cocktails in a couple hours, but the one of us mentality of saying like, we're welcoming you. I think of that video where somebody put on a horse hat and actually like walked around with a bunch of horses, and they let it happen for about 15 minutes, and the horses didn't know that it was a human. They thought it was a horse. And so like, not trying to make a comparison to horses and developers, but like, I do think there is a connection between essentially putting yourself in their shoes so long enough so that they trust you and that they can welcome you into their otherwise closed off community. So here we are today at Notarize. So obviously, our mission is to help people sign and notarize documents online 24/7 from anywhere. And it's not an exciting problem to solve, but because this is why. We have lawyers, legislators, and laws. Like, all of this stuff had been, so for some context, notaries are one of the largest or the oldest public servant roles that we've ever had as a society. Back to the Egyptians, they knew that you and I were inherently flawed as people, and you can trust us. There needed to be an objective third party to make sure that whatever we agreed on or did as a transaction was upheld. There was a witness. And so this is one of the longest standing roles that the public sector has. And so when I joined, this is like what everybody told me, and I hope this is the only bachelor reference that has been made during this 3-day conference. But I really did. It's not. Somebody else made one. The last one. Wow. Yeah. All right. I should have had, my gift game should have been much more diversified. But I had no idea what was in store for me, because I had marketed to developers, to IT professionals, to marketers, to people that spent way too much time on the internet. I don't know what persona they were, but mainly just concerned parents. And so like, here's kind of what you need to know. I told you about the Egyptians a bit. That's great. But in 2012, Virginia passed a law that said people could get documents notarized by use of live audio video technology. And that was great, because very similar to marriage certificates and driver's licenses, that meant that me as a Massachusetts resident could connect to a Virginia notary, and Massachusetts would accept that document. They would recognize that it was done in a state that and has this technology be permitted. And so got into the mission bit, that's all great. But these are some of the stories that when technology breaks down our barriers and our borders digitally, these are the things that come from that. So closing on a home from the Grand Canyon, someone notarized a document in the Amazon rainforest. We've help people notarize documents in every continent except for Antarctica. So if you or your loved ones know anybody in Antarctica, because I've tried to look at flights and it's not really a journey I'm willing to take. If you know anybody in Antarctica, let me know, because I think that would be a great story to tell, just because of what we'd be willing to do to get that story. And then I think it's more on the convenience side, where you've had people abroad and realize a close needs to happen that day, and then they can sell their home from France in Texas, and so many more. So there are millions of reasons why, as a former journalist, this is my dream job, because we report the news every day, and we want to be that source of truth. I think for a lot of us, when we think about SEO and backlinks and all of the referral language that we throw around, we also want to have a piece of that conversation of being a source of truth, or at least a reliable source. We want people, instead of us sorting or sourcing other publications, we want to be the publication that people source. We want to do our original content, original data, and then we want people to link back. Stories. We all have them. We call them case studies. It's so blah. But like, I don't know what other word there is. I'm not trying to create a solution to this, but we at Notarize tell highly emotional stories. People tell us about children who lose their passport in a different country, and the only way for that child to come home is to get a document notarized online, because otherwise it would take 2 weeks to visit a U.S. embassy, and they'd have to go through that process in person. And also, if you have the opportunity to be first, kind of going back to what was core at the Globe, this is like the culmination of all of those things for me. So here's kind of like what we did from a marketing perspective. These were all of the stories where we were either first, we were the source, or we were hyper-local and we were trying to deliver stories to our customers where they were, not where we wanted them to go. And I'll touch on that last bit because I think it's really important. So we did the first ever digital will. Now for places like Arizona and for Florida and Vegas, Nevada, this is great, just given the demographic. But it was also the opportunity to say this had never been done before, and it required a tedious process if you knew how to do it at all. And we actually got covered on TechCrunch, and that was not the intention, but it's kind of like one of those cool little humble brags. The Jerusalem Post is probably my favorite story. One of our biggest value props as a company is we help people around the country and around the world. As long as they're U.S. citizens or they have a U.S. Social Security number, we're not international just yet. And so there are expats living in all of these countries that need to get documents notarized. They didn't know where to go. And we've had hundreds of people come in through this one article who said, I didn't know your service existed, and now I read the Jerusalem Post because I live here, and this is something that's really important to me. We sold the first home online in Minnesota. Many of you might not think that's a big deal, but in the real estate space and as it relates to the technology that we offer, this was a big deal. And it was picked up by a lot of local press in Minnesota. And it was great because we had the opportunity to be first again. But then very similar to the Jerusalem Post story, the story we were trying to tell was a very local one, which is what is the impact on the people of that area? And then the last one is we were included as a source in the Washington Post's piece on how mortgages have gone digital. And there was a piece interviewing about 10 other people in the real estate industry and a couple of lucky vendors, and we happened to be one of them, which is great. And so what I've learned at Notarize from a journalistic and storytelling perspective is momentum is everything. I think that we take for granted a lot of times when we have a great social mention, if we're a brand lucky enough for people to be tweeting at us, if we have a blog that goes viral, we tend to wait too long between big things that do well for us. And it's not always about producing more content, but recognizing what things are giving you that kind of boost of momentum or attention and capitalizing on that. Another thing we realized from a PR perspective was we all want the New York Times. We think that's great. But for us, local news delivered 2x the traffic and the leads that people like the New York Times. Like, fun fact, Naples Daily News has almost half the subscribers of the Boston Globe. A lot of people in Florida. And we learned that through a lot of these articles that we were getting a ton of referral traffic. And the last one is we, as marketers, try to own the launches and the releases and the stories ourselves, where we've actually made it a point to not put out a press release this quarter. We wanted all of our customers to do them for us. So those are three things from a marketing perspective that we've really tried to do, and what I've learned working at Notarize. And so much more broadly, and this gets back to kind of like hiring journalists and non-marketers, our mission as a team is to build a world-class team comprised of the people that you wouldn't expect to be on the team. So I'm not looking for somebody with 5 to 7 years in a demand gen role that does public sector marketing, because there's probably only a handful. But we have a painter, former painter, who runs our creative. We have a former journalist who runs our content strategy. We have a former quant who runs our growth strategy. Like, there are so many roles that run parallel to our marketing ones that I think we need to open our eyes to. So I'm going to talk a little bit about journalists. So this is Andrew. It's a great photo of him because he's holding balloons and he had a haircut. He needs one. But he's on the Notarize team and he runs our content strategy. And so here's a bit of a profile on Andrew. So we wrote sports together at the Boston Globe. He was a journalism major at Northeastern and he ran comms for the Department of Transportation in Mass. And the thing that I love most about Andrew, and I'm foreshadowing the next slide, is all of the things that we think are important for marketers can be taught. There are intangibles from a storytelling perspective, from a communication perspective, all of these things that are hard to. And so here's my cry into the ether as to why you should hire journalists. They're great writers. Like, communication is hard. We all know that, especially in the B2B space. They're great storytellers. So it's the make me feel, make me see, like, put me in that space you were in when you were writing. They're relentless researchers because of the background of they wanted to be first and right, which is if you're going to put out a piece of content, you better be sure you fact check yourself. And if you're going to make a claim, be sure there's somebody else who's saying it. And if not, be sure you have the data to back that up. They do all under deadline. I think for a lot of us, we manage teams or we work with people where things kind of bump back a week. And you thought a launch date of this great new ebook was coming out the third day of February and it's now March 9th. And you're like, how did this happen? Well, we didn't think that this was going to take so long. And this one person had 2 more weeks that they needed to review it because this other thing was on their schedule. We've all been there. But they do really, really well under deadline. If I need to get you a first draft by Friday, I'm going to get you a first draft by Friday. And the last thing is they're moldable. Journalists write about a wide variety of topics. I wrote about girls volleyball and track. Didn't do either of those things. I also covered a lot of interesting topics, both in high school and in college. And you think about people who write about healthcare, people who cover the news in the public sector in a wide variety of ways. They can come in to any different industry and use the same methodology they've developed as journalists to apply that to your business as well. So I want to spend some time on some campaigns and some tactics, because I know that's what people are most interested in, as to how you can kind of apply some of this thinking to the things that you're actually doing every day. So Support Talks is inbound. Does everybody have like a support site? Raise your hand. Do you have a support site? Okay, we got a lot of people. Does anybody see any traction of like first point of entry into your website being like support? I have a couple nods. Okay. So this is a great way to build SEO. This is a great way to capitalize on incoming traffic for the first time. I think we all want it to touch our .com, but most of us have like a support dot, a dev dot, a knowledge center of some kind that actually can rank really well, and Google will rank it higher because it knows that this is not just 800 words of fluffiness and research. It's actually very prescriptive, and there's kind of a 1, 2, 3, how do you solve this problem? And so we have this knowledge center. We have over 20,000 people that come to it every month, and this is one of our highest sources of traffic. Less than 2% are customers. And customer for us is, does somebody upload a document that they need to get notarized? So on our knowledge center, we have articles such as, does UPS notarize documents for free? Where is the like nearest notary near me? These are all things that people who are looking for a solution now clearly aren't getting the help that they want. And so that's the last bit here, which was there is no effort made to get people to take any action. So I took a little bit of the Boston Globe and a little bit of Twitter approach, which is you want to build trust with these people because chances are they didn't know that you could do this online. A couple of people here have done it, but most of you probably didn't know you could. We didn't want to just make them pay without any context as to kind of like how we can help. So be helpful first. And then if we say we're going to send you an email afterwards with information, even if you don't have a document you need to be notarized, like that better come a minute after and you can't hoard the emails for like a new ebook you're publishing 2 weeks later. And so it might be hard to read, but we use Drift. This is an awful screenshot. It's kind of all blurry, but so this is
the bot experience. And so very tactically, we said, what were the biggest problems that people were trying to solve, which is we wanted more documents to be uploaded. Great. We're producing content. We actually have a content calendar for our support and our Knowledge Center articles. I don't think enough people treat those channels like they do their main blog and other, you know, marketing-related channels. And we wanted to be very upfront. So it's kind of like cut through the noise, cut through the BS of developers and say, do you have this thing you need to get notarized right now? If you say no, we say no worries. What's your email? We'll send you some information so that when you do, you know where to go. We deliver on that. That goes through HubSpot, references it as a drift chat. So we get credit for that if it ever converts to a customer. And then we send them an email right away that's like, thanks for coming through our chat. We noticed you didn't have anything right now. Here's where you go when you do. By the way, you were on this UPS stock. Here's other things that UPS can help you with. So about 80% of people, this was like I didn't show this on the screen, but 80% of people say, yes, they do have a document that needs to be uploaded. And one of the things we actually just saw yesterday, so this is our first month, we did this at the beginning of February, we had 60 more people upload documents this month simply because of this bot. We had 4,000 more visitors this month to the Knowledge Center because we now have a content strategy and a storytelling approach around the types of content that people want in this context. It's very transactional. They're looking for help. We realize where the SEO is. It's kind of like, what do I need to do right now? And we build a lot of resources around that. So now we're seeing about 50% of our leads coming in through a support or knowledge-related channel first. We are using the Clearbit API to do a lot of account-based marketing retargeting after we see this information. So for example, if somebody at WeWork needs a document notarized and they're on the site, we're like, this is great, but we recognize you're this monstrous business and you probably have many documents that you need to get notarized, or maybe your clients do. You should check out what we're doing for businesses. So it's that additional layer of context. And more people are getting documents notarized, which means they're paying us, which is great. TV. How many of you have ever gotten on TV for your company before? Raise your hand. It's hard. It's also expensive. I was listening to a panel a couple hours ago. Tony, you were on it, which was how much money people are charging for some of the backlink services that they say, because we have this, you must pay this. HGTV called me and they wanted to feature notarize. How much do you guys think it costs to be featured by HGTV? Like hundreds of thousands of dollars. Hello, I'm a startup. We have 100 people in our company. Let me just take like a C-suite executive salary and put it towards a 30-second, you know, commercial that maybe my grandmother will see because it's during working hours. No thanks. So here's what the story was. We think of all of these things as marketable moments. So every week we come into the office, we say, what is like the big moment we're going to have as a company? Maybe somebody wrote in with a testimonial over the weekend, or we have a big PR event coming up, or there's a product launch. Like, what is our marketable moment this week? And we had 2 weeks heads up on this, but there is an 82-year-old gentleman named George who is a New Hampshire resident, and he was selling his winter condo in Bonita Springs. Fun fact, we've had people in the 90s use our service before, and I think most people would assume that this kind of service is geared more towards millennials or more people who are tech forward. But this is the first time in the real estate space that like online closing software, title production software, which essentially is like, is there any debt on the house that you're buying? Like, is the deed clean? That kind of stuff. Those are the first time those two things had come together. And the person facilitating it was the Miley Cyrus of the local community. Everybody knew him. He was great. I don't know if that's a great comparison. So if you see him or you tweet at him, don't say I compared him to Miley Cyrus, because I'll be seeing him in 2 weeks. But we had an in, right? We couldn't just go to the Naples Daily News and say, hey, we're this big company who you've never heard about before, and we're making history in your little town, and we think it's important for you to write about. So we had an in there. So this is what we did. This is the Boston Globe approach to this, which was like, how do we prove that we're first, or can we get somebody to verify or vouch that we're first? Humanize the story. Could we get George and the people involved to talk about and even visualize how important this was, and making me see and feel something? We wanted to actually put a video camera on George while he was going through this so we could show from a usability perspective how easy this was. The launch plan. Okay. So we were going to tell local media that history is being made. So we already had an in with a person, James, not Miley Cyrus, to be able to do that for us. We were going to coordinate kind of this like big local press day where people were going to come, very similar to what you see with like high school athletes when they have the three hats and they choose one and you're like, great, this is 10 minutes of my life I can't get back. And then the last one is, of course, we're going to be doing the regular supporting marketing activities on our end. And so we were on TV. And I never thought I'd be excited to be on ABC 7, which is the local television station in Naples or in that area, Southwest Florida. But in the bottom right, so the video, you guys can look it up. They actually go through and they talk to George and they asked him how easy it was. But they show B-roll of him actually doing the selling of his condo. And it was super cool because two things, people in Florida went nuts. They were like, we're innovative. This is the first time that like we're getting love as a state. Not the first time, I don't want to make any assumptions, but like one of the first times that we are being focused on and highlighted for this innovation. And then two, the story is super cool. So now we know that you can do this. So here's what the impact was. We got a lot of great local coverage. The Naples Daily News was just one. ABC 7, we had 50,000 people come to our site from this one event. This is nuts. Everybody in the real estate space who wasn't doing this in their own state was interested as to how they could start to do this. And is it available? Have they just not asked the right people if they can do this yet? And we had a bunch of press outlets who syndicated this on our behalf, mainly real estate industry focused ones. And that was a huge angle to our storytelling, which was focusing on the people who actually cared about this, hyper focused. So I alluded to this earlier, and I want to make sure that I give you guys some time to kind of leave and take the information with what you will. But I believe that marketing can be taught. I think that right now we're moving from a world in which we have a 5 to 7 year, a 6 to 8 year, a 3+ years when somebody's graduating college. We are automatically bucketing people into pass-fail categories based on their work experience, where there are far more important things, in my opinion, that are telltale signs of somebody can be a great asset to your marketing team, specifically in the storytelling and writing context, if they're journalism majors, if they have their own blog, if they're funny on Twitter. I've used Twitter not as like a way to be creepy, but as like following people because I think they're great storytellers. Like storytellers are, it doesn't matter what channel you're on. I'm not on Musical.ly recruiting, but I do believe that like people who do that well would also be great marketers. But I use Andrew as an example all the time, which is Andrew, when we talk about this all the time at Notarize, which is people like Andrew wouldn't have been considered if somebody didn't fight for them. And that's what we're dealing with right now. So I will end with, fight for more people that you believe have the skills that you don't think can be taught as easily, and then spend the time to teach them. So thank you.
Questions?
Is that a super practical question?
Sure.
For years thinking about hiring a journalist to fill out our editorial team.
Yeah.
Can you give me pointers on like where should I start? You know, in the concept, there's lots of different stuff.
Freelance journalists?
That's a great question, Adam.
Well, but no, that's my answer. So I, no. I think people who don't have a ton of job security are obviously like a first. So I don't know if everybody heard the question, like where do you go to find journalists if you want to hire them? Freelance journalists tend to be where I focus because I know that they are living their life article by article, and there's not a ton of certainty there. I also don't look all the time for journalists per se, but maybe people who went to school for journalism. I do think like those 4 years of having that be something that you're really focused on, even if you're in maybe a video role now or you're doing something in the healthcare space, like you can come back to those roots. And then people that have personal blogs that I follow, that's a big one too. Yes?
Give us your thought about humanizing the story or storytelling when there's something bad involved, like a hurricane or financial loss. And you know, how do you humanize the story and tell that human aspect of the story without sounding like you're an ambulance chaser or dwelling on really, really something bad that happened to somebody or a customer?
Yeah. So you're saying, I think it's about, well, you still need to tell the story if, like, for people that need to understand what it was like to be there. But I think the perspective you have on it is more important, which is we're not going to tell you how bad it is and like what the ambulances were like, but we want to tell you that this is like one of the reasons why this bill is really important, because for context, there's 7 of these that happen every year, like using it more as a jumping off point for a bigger topic or article that you want to write as opposed to like reporting on that. Yeah. Yes.
So I kind of want to flip it around because I've been in marketing for years, but I'm not that strong in writing.
Yeah.
So do you have recommendations on almost like journalism class for marketers?
Well, so usually what I recommend for people who are interested in getting to be better writers is, one is follow great writers or people that you're interested in and kind of observe how they structure stories. Many of you have written press releases before. They follow very similar frameworks and structures. Great storytelling is very similar. There's this inverted triangle we're all showed as journalists, like essentially don't bury the lead. So, you know, there was a fire on the 3rd floor of this apartment building, yada, 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 as opposed to being like 3 children were sent to the emergency room when a 2-story fire, you know, like that kind of stuff. So I do think great writers have that framework. I don't know of any classes, but I pump a lot of my content through like Grammarly and other headline graders, copy graders, even asking, finding like somebody you trust their perspective on your writing, and then writing a lot more for yourself. I think, yeah, it's a good indicator of how good you are as a writer based on what people will continue to give you feedback on in terms of the content you're producing. Like if you blog personally and someone's like, I think this topic is great, or the way you describe it is great, taking aspects of what's working in that and applying it to, yeah, your job. You're welcome. Yes. Yeah, so we do have an in-house agency and we position ourselves very differently. So like they're really focused on telling our local story. So like building the brand locally for hiring, executive profiling, and then also like founder story. For us, our CEO founded the company because he sold his previous one to Twitter and he could do everything except notarize the last document that needed to be notarized in order to sell the company and then partake in the IPO that Twitter had like 4 months later. And so that was kind of the genesis of the company, and that still has yet to be told. So they're focused there. Where we're focused internally as a company is really taking our product launches, our customer stories and all of that stuff and trying to connect that with people who run local newspapers and industry-related publications. So it's a little bit of hand-to-hand combat. We don't have like a great syndicated way of being like these 7 people every single time we're going to pump the news to, because I do think even journalists want to have the inside scoop. So one of the things that I talk about all the time is like make sure you're offering something that's either like an exclusive or that they're feeling like they're getting information that nobody else has. And I think that in and of itself is enough of a way to get them interested. Cool. Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
Cool.
Any other questions? All right.
Thanks. Awesome. Yeah, sure.